Prepare yourself for the boasts of battle.
This week, I'd like to bring you another bit of the conversation I had with Josh Toby, a painter and good friend that I brought in to help me with a short story I did at my webcomic, Long John. We did an 8-page short story together featuring the character Hellrider Jackie, and he did all the art. As I said before, even though we started from the sort of the same sort of beginnings with wanting to make our own comics and video games, we went in very different directions. And this time we get to go more into his own personal history, his own influences, and how our early bits influenced the high art he eventually ended up focusing on. Again, the sound quality is a little questionable. It sounds like a recorded telephone call, which I guess it technically is, even though it was over the internet. So again, I'll say sit back, relax, and enjoy listening to a comicker and a painter who are very, very old friends talk about art. We talked a lot about sort of your sort of theory behind why you do what you do. I just kind of want to maybe go back and just sort of fill in some details. I don't necessarily need a biography, but like, when do you remember when you started making art or when you started drawing or anything like that? Or what got you drawing from the beginning? I've talked about it a little bit on the website and I think on a podcast where like, when we first met, the first time I ever saw you draw anything where you were drawing, You're drawing little baby animals and putting fucking missile launchers and machine guns on them.
Oh, I'm guessing dude.
I still have one of those. I'm guessing you've been drawing. Yeah. And I'm guessing you were drawing for a while before then. So, like, do you remember when you started? Or obviously, maybe not the moment, but how old you were and why you started to draw?
I might have told you. I don't know. It was first grade, and every day some student would have like their own little bit of time to finger paint, it was always the same. Some kid is using their hands to make a painting that's complete and total mud and squiggles. Me, I went and made a landscape. The sun had teeth. And then the little jack-off kids are making fun of me because my son wasn't perfect. And I'm thinking, it's like, all of you have just managed to make this brownish-green thing with finger marks. Right. And so at the time, we could make two paintings. I think it was on, like, 18 by 24 paper. The first one was the sun. The next one was a total piece of crap like everybody else is doing. I didn't get the heat from the comp. I didn't get any crappy comments from the kids. And then doing like little coloring things. And I remember this to this day. One of the students' father was there. And it was Valentine's. And so we did this little exercise, make a squiggle, and then color it in. But you might find something in there to color. And for example, his example was he drew a squiggle and kind of had this thing look sort of like a fish. And so he colored it in and was like, oh, now we get to cut it out. And so I was doing mine. I colored it in, but I knew I was going to be cutting it out, and I wanted the color to bleed off the cuts, not go right up to the edge and get the little rough coloring. And he told me, no, I got to stay within the lines. Like, but dude, I'm going to cut this out. I want this to be clean. And, that was going through my head at first grade. And then I'd always be, like, doodling and whatever in school, but never anything serious. And then, when we met in sixth grade, I remember those animals. nothing super specific, but it came from one of those how to draw 50-some-odd animals or something. And so I just basically went, looked at the last drawing, what it's supposed to look like, drew the stupid animal, and then put, like a little radar dish on a rabbit's head or something, or like a little jetpack on it. It was more interesting to me because it was easy enough to copy the pages from the book. That was the easy part. But after sixth grade, we kind of messed around with the art, but I still wasn't doing anything major. It wasn't until I first did the college classes that things mm-hmm. I was sort of introduced to real art history.
Right. So, yeah, actually, I wanted to talk about that. If we kind of skip over the comic book portion of our lives, who is
well,
kind of the
no,
first
I mean,
artist?
That's still an important factor in everything.
Sure.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, but I don't know, maybe another story for another day.
Right. I mean, because I think I've talked a lot about, well, maybe not a lot, but some of the major influences that I've had in comics are I think that's of our own stories, that's where we line up the most. Like, we could talk about Jim Lee and Jeff Scott Campbell and shit like that, and Brett Booth and the whole Image era, right? But the internet talks enough about those guys enough. I want to talk about, like, in those college classes, and you started looking outside the realm of maybe comics or even video games. Well, I mean, who were the artists that you really kind of latched on to? I'm sure one of the earliest ones, for both you and me, we kind of discovered this guy together, but it was the first guy kind of out of the normal realm of comics was Amano, Yoshitaka Amano.
Yeah, when we got his name and seeing his work, it's like, whoa, you know, it's this strange kind of accepted fantasy, and maybe it was worlds that we understood, that he was the mm-hmm. visual architect of this. And seeing his vision, and then us being aware of his translated vision, I think was enough to kind of at least crack open the door to another land of possibilities.
Yeah. I just remember, with regard to him, I think for both of us, kind of, we found him, you know, through, we found as much as we could. We got as many of his books as we could. If we use Amano as a starting point, kind of, where did he take you in terms of finding artists? If he took you anywhere, or did you kind of get to the end with him and find someone just going off on a different branch at that point?
Or at least for me, the idea of illustrator and fine art was still pretty blurred.
Mm-hmm.
But I had already, you know, Brian Froud was, I was sort of heavily into his fairy fantasy kind of mythologies, but his illustrations.
Right.
And then Amano sort of was along the same lines, but, well, at the time, getting translated works was that, you know, it had its difficulties.
Right. This is like the mid to late 90s, where when not a lot was coming over at this point in terms of books or even anime at that point.
It was starting to. So mm-hmm. plenty of bootlegs, but we could begin to get the Japanese content, but not a translated version of that like you can these days.
Mm-hmm.
They both were illustrating their own worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And as it so happens, Amano's work actually seems to translate very well to the digital video game interactive world. It's
right.
just toned down a little bit. And so it was interesting seeing his original ideas, and I knew that I wanted to be somehow involved in a creative process to be the visual architect of the looks and feels of quite possibly interactive content.
Yeah, and that's the kind of one thing with when we were growing up, is that when we would make these characters or these stories for other comics or video games, like, you really got into this world building process. You would write out, in addition to your sketches, like, histories and, like, magic systems and shit like that. Like, you were really into, like, what's going on, you know, what happened in the world to get to this drawing I'm doing, in a sense. I would say that translates. That's one constant that kind of goes through your paintings. Even if you don't lay it all out, you know, especially some of your pretty extreme landscapes, like, it feels like kind of a lived-in world, like something has, you know, there have been generations that have been through here, you know, and I think what your art tends to do now is kind of, it's like, what happens when the civilization has come and gone, in a sense, and, like, what remains, and how do we get civilization to be lonely, in a sense. And that's what I really take away, I really enjoy about a lot of your, especially with the paintings you did, at least last half decade or something like that. You've been changing things a lot recently, and it's really cool to see. But you seem to have this really strong sense of, this is a lived-in place, even if it is completely alien-looking to a normal passerby.
Well, I mean, I could see how people would see alien aspects of what I'm doing, but, like, I'm not getting too far off from reality.
Right, right. I just meant like, alien as in like different from the norm.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean that. I mean, you had already mentioned that. Yeah, I do think a lot about what is happening and how to arrive at the conclusion to make something mm-hmm. the way I've made it. I don't know, say for example, why a certain grouping of rocks or a certain formation is, I might have some kind of visual record or experience in something that's mm-hmm. sort of similar, but when it comes to, displaying certain colors or architectural elements, is that yes, it is based on something real, but how we arrive to that version is that's when a lot of symbolic elements begin to add up to push us to this final outcome. It's difficult to say just in speaking, but looking at a specific painting, I could explain why things are laid out the way that they're laid out. And the same goes for the creative process. Is before I go into it, I need to make sure it makes sense.
Yeah, it's kind of evolved beyond being developing the chronological history like we did for like the comics and the games. And you're more focused on like logic. You can, instead of explaining like what happened in this place 1,000 years ago, it's like I can tell you how this world works. And that's a much more present, much more active kind of way of thinking about art. Instead of just like, let me tell you everything that happened before. I can tell you exactly how this world works. And that's pretty, I think it brings in a lot of science and sort of philosophy kind of stuff into it too, in a sense. It's like, you're really thinking hard about this. You're not just painting for the sake of painting, right?
Right. And, anybody can paint. Anybody can do realistic portraiture. All that's very academic. But then you have to figure in, so how do you interpret all this? And for mm-hmm. me, this is the best I can do to create a visual diary of our time right now. This is mm-hmm. my record of my existence in the 21st century, the first part of the 21st century. And so I do read a lot of what's going on in terms of recent finds in paleontology, new mm-hmm. archaeological discoveries, what's going on in astrophysics, new ways to, what the math is telling us about dimension.
Right, right.
This is significant for our time, and I want to, believe it or not, it is incorporated into the images that I do. If I wanted to depict hatred, I would have to find a way to add enough symbolic elements. There is somehow a hate element to it.
Right. Or fear or something like it goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the writing and the notes and stuff like that. It's not so much like I'm going to make a painting about, the latest findings in dark matter. It's like you're internalizing all that stuff and like internalizing how it makes you feel and how not only you, but the world around you is reacting to this stuff. And that's what gets processed and gets put into the painting or the drawing or whatever.
Yeah, that's part of the challenge, is that this message, mm-hmm. we can all write diaries. But mm-hmm. if we're not doing anything big with our lives, who's really going to read it? It's just our record that maybe might get passed down from a few a generation or two and end up at a Goodwill someday and forgotten. And so in a way, it comes back to being a human being right now. I seem to have a knack for making images, and I want to make my images count for something. I really don't care to explain what everything is, but mm-hmm. it wouldn't exist if it weren't for being aware of what's going on around us.
And that was a bit more of the conversation I had with Josh Tobey. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these as much as I've had talking, recording, and editing them. He's a really interesting guy, and even though I've known him for 23 years now, I'm still learning more about him by having conversations like this. If you'd like to check out the collaboration Josh and I made together, you can check that out at longjohncomic.com, or keep up to date with Josh by liking his official Art of Josh Tobey fan page. So for now, I'd just like to say, I'm D. Bethel, and that was my boast. Be sure to check back later in the week for another, for all intents and purposes, shortcast.
Thank you.